The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, reaction to last night. The Pac-12, once again, not in a championship game. What is going on in Pac-12 spring football workouts? Remy Martin, if you're a Pac-12 fan, were you cheering for him last night? All things with John Wilner and the Wilner Hotline coming up at 10:20. Kalen Jones at 10:35 from The Ringer. Off-season around the NFC, things that we're seeing around the NFL, the draft 3 weeks away. We'll chop it up with Kalen Jones. Kalen did a great story on the green dot on the back of helmets. Some people may not know about. Real good deep dive on The Ringer. That's the type of work they do. And I want to talk to Kalen about that as well. It's a really good read. So John Wilner and Kalen Jones on today's show. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their ongoing support. Yeah, I felt good for Remy Martin last night. I did. I think everybody today is talking about either that or like me sitting here watching the Masters. I'll be distracted on Thursday's show, just so you know. Probably you're right there with me. When Tiger Woods is out on the range today and he hits a ball that hits the golf ball pickup, hits the cart that's picking up the balls, and his caddy's there laughing because he's that dialed in, I think it's really good. So I digress onto the Masters. I'll get to it in a minute. But last night, if you look at just where Kansas came from, they blew right through the bracket. They didn't get a whole lot of attention. They had the two players from here in Arizona, and Remy Martin and Mitch Lightfoot, that both were productive. I thought Carolina was so good inside. And Baycott, I don't know if you saw the piece of video on social, because in social you can do this where they slow it down. You can actually see the floorboard coming up a little bit where he rolled his ankle. I wasn't Photoshopped. I looked at it. Other people picked up on it. When Baycott injured his ankle, even before that, what a baller. What a badass. I mean, he was just so good last night. And I wanted Carolina to win. I thought they were going to win. Kansas comes all the way back, one of the best comebacks you'll ever see. And they just weren't ready. Carolina just wasn't ready. And that was the calling card of Kansas here in the tournament, is they would go on big runs. They just wake up and say, all right, we're going to go on an 18-4 run. Things like that. And they couldn't overcome it, they being North Carolina. So a tremendous tournament all the way around. There's no downside to the NCAA tournament. It never disappoints, other than, yeah, I would like to see a team from Arizona be around in the championship game. You know, UCLA made a nice run last year. Is it just UCLA and Arizona? Why is it just those two teams? Why can't it be others within the conference? We're going to talk to John Wilner about that here in a few minutes. In terms of the Masters, so Tiger this morning said, as of now, he's going to play on Thursday. I have to wonder what the gambling side of it's going to be. Like, I'm going to put down something on Tiger to make the cut, because that'll be out there. That'll be over on DraftKings or Caesar. It'll be out there somewhere. Tiger Woods to make the cut, $5. If you don't want to see Tiger Woods make the cut, I don't know. Are you really a fan of sport? Do you really hate on somebody that much? Because this is as good a story as you're going to have. And he said today, I do think I can win the Masters. What's he going to say? You know, do you think Tiger Woods would say, no, you know what, I came here, I'm just happy to be here, and I'm just happy to be able, after the car accident, be able to get around. He's got a little bit of a limp to him. This will only add on to the legacy, the story of Tiger Woods. And I want him to play well. I want him to be there all weekend. I don't want to see him dragging his leg around. That's the only thing, is as he's sitting there and it gets to, you know, 54 holes on Saturday, is fatigue going to set in to where it's just going to be a hard watch? And a cart has to come up and take him, and he's got to withdraw, something like that, which you would never think. But competitors, you know, they want to be out on the field. They want to be in their sport. They don't want to walk away. They don't know when it's time to walk away. And so here's Tiger Woods that, you know, he's not at 100%, but it looks like, just on the range, just how he's saying, up here, yeah, I do think I can win the Masters. I wouldn't expect it any other way. If he said anything other than that today, I'd be like, what are you doing? If you don't expect to win, at the highest level, then you're not fully engaged. You know, I saw where Matsuyama's got a stiff neck. That concerns me. I like him a lot. Defending champ, want him to be at 100%. I saw Dustin Johnson just a few minutes ago doing his thing with the media. So I am all geeked up, and it's only Tuesday. Once we get to Thursday, forget it. Just chairman of the board, the Iron Man, Jared Nielsen's going to do the show. I don't know. Maybe the Bulldog, Steve Burney's going to do the show. I don't know. I just know that I've got this feeling of after watching last night with March Madness and then getting up today and there's the Masters. It's just, oh, it's so good. And I'm heading to the ballpark today. I have not talked much about the Diamondbacks because the Diamondbacks have not given us much to speak about. Okay, I'm going down there today. They're playing the Guardians. If you haven't heard, that's Cleveland. They were known as the Indians. It's one of these worthless preseason exhibition games except for pitchers to get in their work. I get it when it comes to baseball. You can't have enough practice. Regular season opens up on Thursday night. Someone who would know on the inside at the Diamondbacks informed me yesterday they're expecting about 22,000 for opening night. 22,000 for opening night. This is where we are. Stadium holds, I don't know, 42? Oh, the stadium's too big. I'd be nice to have 35 there. Be nice to have 30 there. South of 30 for opening day? It just tells you, and part of it in fairness to them is, yes, COVID wrecked the baseball season 2 years ago. Last year, fans having to show up still in masks kept some fans away. Me, didn't bother me a bit. Team had a ton of injuries. They were done by early May, and they went on to win just, what, 51 games. So, yeah, it's 2 years in a row of just an awful situation all the way around. Doesn't look like it's going to be much better this year. I don't know. If they get to 70 wins, is it a ton of improvement? Sure. Should they get north of that with their starting pitching comes together and plays well? Yeah. Brent Strom is interesting to me. That's the pitching coach from the Astros who came over here. He turned McCullers into something amazing in Houston. Can he do anything with these guys, in particular someone like Zach Gallen? Because I know that Mad Bum is going to do what he does. Okay, I know that. The rest of the starting rotation, it's a reach. It's a stretch. It doesn't matter what goes on in L.A. or San Francisco. You just got to show up and play. Like, I think the Padres are not going to have a great season. They throw all this money around, and they still don't know who one of their outfield positions is going to be. They don't know about Tatis. I'm hearing stuff about Tatis, like, is this guy even going to be in San Diego long-term? Just a lot of things blowing around over there. And so you don't know. Last year, nobody thought the Giants were going to do what they did. I'm not giving you the spring holds eternal deal. I'm not doing that. But I don't think that this is going to be the worst team that's ever been rolled out on the field for the Diamondbacks. Ketel Marte is a top five, top 10 MVP player. He's just going to be on a team where nobody's going to see him. It's kind of like Devin Booker back in the day. We would see Devin Booker and say, man, he's really good. And he'd never get voted on the All-Star team. Why? Because he was on a lousy team. And it's still haunting him to this day, even though he's on the best team in the NBA from a record standpoint. Suns play the Lakers tonight. Devin's not going to win the MVP. Do you see what Embiid did the other night? Oh, my goodness. I mean, you talk about a stat line that's just, whew. And Devin's just out here doing his thing. And Suns, he should be in top three, in my opinion, in MVP vote. But it's going to be Joker. It's going to be Embiid. And if Devin is in the third spot, then next year, okay, you finish top three. Now there's more buzz about you. Is he fifth, sixth, seventh? It's still, well, he was on a bad team for so many years in Phoenix, even though you get to the finals. Fanboy doesn't want to hear this stuff, you know, people that drink the Kool-Aid and everything's great and all that stuff. That's why he's in this mess in terms of his national run. And that's pretty much it. You know, the one note here, I'm watching last night and the head of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, when he says congrats to the Kansas City Jayhawks, like, I don't know. I don't know why or how people can be so clueless in positions of authority. I mean, I do. It's like when Larry Scott was running the Pac-12 and there's been people that were running the Suns back in the, you know, the last 10 years that were just like, well, what are you doing? What are you saying? Nobody relates to you. The Kansas City Jayhawks. No, it's KU. Do you not know this? Do you know where Lawrence is located? We have to go to Kansas City for the Jayhawks to present them with their national title, this or that. No, sir, it's in Lawrence. Where the hell is Lawrence? Never heard of it. It's people. All right. Next is John Wilner. And some of the I want to talk to John about involves why can't a school like, I don't know, USC or Arizona State or Oregon or Stanford, anybody have some basketball pedigree that can push them to a Final Four? And yet Tucson can do it. Obviously UCLA with John Wooden, I get it. But this conference with new leadership, do they really have an emphasis on winning in a big way? And then Caitlin Jones on things around the NFL. That's all straight ahead. Stay with us. All right, as promised, it is Wilner Hotline. He's in the Wilner Mobile. John Wilner with us. Of course, check out all of his content online at Wilner Hotline. We carry it on the website at sports360az.com. All things around the college space, in particular the Pac-12. Okay, Pac-12 closing the gap so that today, a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we actually have a Pac-12 school that's going to win a national championship in college basketball. I asked you this after football. Now I got to ask you it after basketball. John, are we close here in the Pac-12?
Way closer than a year ago, than a couple of years ago, for sure. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, Arizona and UCLA are both headed in the right direction at the same time for the first time in 15, 20 years, really. And those are the two schools that have the best chance to get to the Final Four and to win the national title. And we know that because they're the ones that have done it the most, right? And in college football and college basketball, you know, past is the best indicator of future success.
Why is it Arizona and UCLA? Why can't Stanford? Why can't Oregon? Why can't Arizona State? Is it just lack of commitment, lack of resources? Why is it a school in Tucson and one in LA are the only two, John?
Well, LA, I mean, that goes back to the John Wooden era and the history of the success, all those banners, all those NBA draft picks, and the access to recruits, right? I mean, you know, there are more than enough players within an hour's drive of UCLA for them to have a, you know, contending roster. And those kids grew up knowing UCLA is the place to go, and their parents grew up with the Wooden era. And, you know, it's the same, you know, you can look at it like any of the elite football programs like Ohio State or Oklahoma. Arizona's a little different. You know, it's all tied to Lute Olson. There's not a lot of players in town, but there's so much history. Again, a proven track record of putting kids in the NBA. The fact that the community support is off the charts, right? If you're an elite recruit, you want to go someplace where college basketball matters. Mm-hmm. And you got 14,000 people at McHale for a scrimmage. That has a lot to do with it. It's close enough to LA to make it easy for parents to get there. More kids in Phoenix, just tradition and commitment, community commitment.
Is there an infrastructure behind the scenes where a guy like Steve Kerr, I think, still wields a ton of weight when it comes to anything that goes on at U of A? If they need something, they've got somebody at the top of the food chain in all of basketball and Steve. Steve does a lot behind the scenes, in my humble opinion, just from what I've heard. But add to that, they have the ability to go get a coach. And Sean tried this, and Sean had some success. But what's going on with Tommy Lloyd is he's going around the globe, and he's convincing people to come to Tucson, Arizona. And so I got to believe that there is an infrastructure within the athletic department that is in place to help them succeed, where at other universities, there just isn't that same commitment. Why is USC so good in football, but in basketball? They should have everything at their doorstep, but they don't. I'm just wondering if you feel like the infrastructure is in place in Tucson.
Well, I think it certainly is. You've got everybody in that athletic department is moving forward to do whatever can be benefiting basketball. It's a basketball school. Yeah. UCLA is a basketball school. USC is a football school. You don't see both, right? There's almost no cases where your elite year after year in both sports, right? I mean, think about the basketball schools and then consider the state of their football programs, right? Duke and North Carolina, not football powers.
Kansas.
Indiana, Kentucky, yeah. Kansas, Syracuse, yeah. Arizona, even UCLA is not a football power, right? But at the same time, you know, look at the football schools, Ohio State, Alabama, USC, Oklahoma. You don't think of them as blue bloods in basketball. It's very difficult, if not impossible, for an athletic department to be all in, all on the same page with both sports because both require so much time and so many resources.
In your early dealings with the new administrator leading the Pac-12, have you found that basketball is more on the radar than it was football? Because Larry Scott, to me, was all football.
I think they are still mostly football. I mean, I don't think they have decreased their football emphasis. If not, they've ratcheted up. And maybe they've ratcheted up basketball a little bit too. I mean, it is clear that they are, you know, they are being very public about the fact they want to win championships in football and men's basketball. Mm-hmm. It's been since 2004 in football and since 1997 in basketball. And Larry Scott used to talk about, the score. In fact, it's almost a direct quote. The scoreboard we use is success in all sports, championships in all sports.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nobody, you know, so few people care about championships in golf or softball and all that. It's about football and men's basketball. That's where the money is. That's where the passion is.
Right.
And those are the sports that can have, when you're successful, they can bring benefits across the entire university. And the Pac-12 has changed its tune since Larry Scott left.
The story of Remy Martin last night, I think it shows that the transfer portal does have a place. Bobby was very open with Remy, and I talked to Remy, and his father was open too about last May. This isn't directed at Bobby Hurley. We've done everything we can do, and Bobby is encouraging us to look around. I don't hold ASU responsible for Remy Martin leaving. If anything, this was one of those very rare cases. I think it speaks to Bobby's character that I've seen. You have to celebrate what Remy Martin did last night, even though he put four long years in at Arizona State.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't look at this as a black mark on ASU at all. And especially a kid who, you know, was there for 4 years and went, you know, had a lot of stuff going on and off the court.
Yep.
Over that time. Right. All you got to do in this case is say, you know, good for him. He deserves it. Good dude, good player, and he put in his time in Tempe, and nobody should begrudge him at all for what he did. And nobody should be at all critical on ASU for him leaving. It's a win for him, and it's not a bad thing for ASU at all.
We want to see kids have success at the end of the day.
Yep.
I mean, we really do. John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline. Make sure you follow him on social media, Wilner Hotline. Check out his content on the website. What are you hearing, if anything, around spring football that's piqued your interest early on? Here in my end, it's what's Ty Thompson and Bo Nix look like at quarterback battle at Oregon. Ty, of course, tore it up down here. I think in Tucson, you know, I don't know why they haven't just said Delora is the guy and there's no other debate about it. So some of these other guys could transfer out. We're in the middle of spring football. What's caught your eye?
What has caught my eye is the lack of major developments, right? And that's nobody has declared a starting quarterback. I think in a lot of cases, the coaches want that thing to go on into August because the moment you give somebody the edge, another kid's going to leave.
Yep.
And then you've got depth problems. So there's been no real separation with the quarterbacks. There've been no, you know, Washington announced that they one of their top defensive players is out for, you know, going to miss a chunk of the season. But to me, the big thing about spring practice is getting through it without losing one of your star players for the whole next season for injury. And we've seen that. That has happened, over the years. Arizona lost, Austin Hill for a whole season due to an injury in spring practice. The fact that there haven't been any season-ending injuries, to me, is a big deal. But we'll see how things play out. A lot of schools are, you know, weeks away from finishing, and I'll be curious to see how some of those end-of-spring scrimmages go.
Yeah, and we're also in a space, right? The transfer portal is going to start ramping up here in the next.
Ramp it back up, yes. That's going to be the biggest news of the spring. Is going to be what happens after the spring and who leaves. With four new coaches and a whole lot of new coordinators on both offense and defense, I think a lot of kids are going to realize the writing's on the wall and they're going to transfer out in late April and May.
Yeah, and you know, I keep hearing at USC, you know, they went over and raided Colorado like everybody raids Colorado. Colorado's turned into the JV, go play well at Colorado and go elsewhere. And it sounds like Lincoln Riley, from talking to some people over there, he's going to continue to spin the portal here after the spring ends, and we could see another half dozen players come on board just at SC. He's the one that's caused the most buzz, which is predictable. I think on the other side, Chip Kelly's on the defensive with the media there in LA.
Two different ways of building your roster. I mean, UCLA has used the portal effectively over the years. They, I think, have a little bit less flexibility with who they can bring in because of admissions. And, you know, especially with the graduate programs as well. And USC, I mean, Riley came in, they only signed a handful of kids, you know, recruits. He left enough space on his roster for 10, 15 transfers, knowing that that was going to be a big key. They've filled the skill positions at SC. To me, if they're going to have a lot of newcomers in April and May, it's going to be on defense and on the offensive line, because that's where they really need to fortify their roster.
Stay safe. Good catching up with you and chopping it up. A lot going on, John. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
Here's John Wilner. You can find him at Wilner Hotline, and of course, on the website as well. Make sure you follow his content. It's great stuff. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, time to chop it up with Kalen Jones from The Ringer. We have to start, first of all, we're going to get to the NFL stuff in a minute, but he's a Sun Devil. So, Remy Martin. Did you cover Remy Martin when you were at Arizona State, Kalen?
I briefly did. I think I caught either his freshman or his sophomore year. It was pretty brief, but, you know, he was massively entertaining. So, it was cool to see him, you know, get a title last night with the Kansas Jayhawks. That was awesome to see. Hit some big shots.
Were you cheering for him last night?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You were cheering? I thought in this business we're not supposed to cheer. Is the Maroon Gold coming out in you?
You know, what's funny, like a lot of my friends, like, you know, all my friends from Arizona, like they're a lot bigger Arizona fans, like this, you know, teams in general than I am. Yeah. And so it's like on a rare occasion, you know, I was very, very pro ASU last night. So, you know, forks up all of that. Look at that. Wow. I got that.
You.
School spirit.
Man, the alumni council is going to call and request a check after that little endorsement. Kalen Jones at The Ringer with us for a few minutes. All right. In all seriousness, you wrote a piece on the green dot. And I think that, you know, you watch games and you're like, what's the dot for? And you decided to go down that rabbit hole. For people that didn't see it, don't know what we're talking about, but everybody consumes the NFL. What made you decide to go down that path and that story?
Yeah, so watching the Los Angeles Rams, getting to cover them, and then even the Chargers locally for me in LA, you know, they're two of, I think it was six total teams that I ended up counting, who used defensive backs as the guy who wears the green dot. Basically, the green dot signifies which player is wearing the headset inside of their helmet. So that way it's coach to player communication. The player can't talk back, but in between plays, coaches are allowed to, you know, relay their play calls into a defender. And then the defender is able to tell all the defensive players. That wasn't allowed until 2008. NFL quarterbacks, meanwhile, have been able to have that technology since the 1990s. So I noticed that Jordan Fuller for the Rams, he was only a second-year player, former fourth-round pick. He was the one wearing the dot for the Rams until he got injured last season. And so that piqued my interest. And so throughout the year, I was just collecting quotes from some of the opposing coaches, some of the opposing players who would come into town. And, you know, funny enough, you know, unfortunately for Fuller, he ended up getting hurt. But Eric Weddle, the first defensive back ever who I found to wear the green dot, ended up coming out of retirement, and he ends up wearing the green dot in the Super Bowl. So it was a cool story to have reported throughout the entire year. And, you know, it was a really fascinating subject because not too many people know about the history of the green dot, or that, you know, the Cleveland Browns tried to do something similar in the 1960s, got caught by the NFL, and that wasn't allowed. And, you know, it just shows how technology, you know, has influenced the game of football. and also how, you know, defenses have, you know, tried to keep up with the game and how it keeps evolving and favoring offenses. Because, you know, John Villman was telling me this, like, back in the day before, you know, the headsets were allowed in the helmets, you know, quarterbacks and coaches on opposing offenses, kind of like 2007, 2008 era, you know, they were able to run around like crazy, and defenses didn't really have any way to cleanly combat that. So the technology definitely helps, and, you know, it'll continue to be a prominent part of our game.
That is so cool. Caitlin Jones with us at The Ringer. Check out his content, including The Green Dot. Take Tom Brady out of the equation, the story that you've been most fascinated with here in the offseason.
Ooh, that is a good question. I think maybe Russell Wilson and what he ends up doing with the Denver Broncos, because I figured personally, like, if my goal is to win a Super Bowl, I figured you look at the state of the NFC, and if I'm Russell Wilson, I probably would have hung around within the conference just to figure out, because I think the pathway to winning another title might be easier through that conference than it would be, you know, playing in the AFC West, going up against a Chargers team that looks like it's coming into itself. It looked like it should be one of the better teams in the league next year. And you already have the Kansas City Chiefs, who have been, you know, perennial Super Bowl contenders. We'll see whether or not they can continue to sustain that without Tyreek Hill. And then the Las Vegas Raiders have upgraded tremendously, obviously adding Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones to their roster. And so that's a team that's coming off a playoff appearance. So I think it's really fascinating that Russell Wilson chose to go to Denver. I think that it significantly upgrades what they can do offensively. I'm very curious to see what Nathaniel Hackett, first-year head coach from Green Bay, how he ends up scheming the offense around Russell Wilson's strengths. Because it felt like last year with Seattle, I thought the Shane Waldron hire, offense coordinator for Seattle, was a good fit, but it just didn't seem to consistently work for Seattle. So whether or not Russell can get it done in Denver, you know, an area that should, you know, play into his ability to throw the ball significantly deep, I think that, you know, there's potential for the Broncos to be, you know, a Super Bowl contender. That potential is obviously there. But again, you're playing in such a crowded division, let alone conference, which, you know, the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens, the Cleveland Browns, now Cincinnati Bengals, who just led, you know, represented the AFC in the Super Bowl. It's a very crowded room. And, you know, Russell Wilson has, you know, put his eggs into the Denver basket. So we'll see whether or not that pays off.
Okay, flip it around then over to the NFC West, where he does leave. Drew Locke can't be the starter, or can he? One. And what do you just make out of what's gone on here as we're in April now in the offseason in the NFC West?
Yeah, so Drew Locke being the starter in Seattle, I think that maybe, you know, the Seahawks understand that this is a rebuilding year. You know, even though they do have superstars at receiver and Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, they have someone in Jamal Adams who they invested significantly to add. You know, I don't see a pathway for them necessarily competing for a playoff spot, you know, unless they find a way to upgrade the quarterback position, whether that's in the draft or via trade. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield, they continue to be linked to Seattle just because of the sheer fact that that both players are an upgrade on Drew Locke, who they have right now in the center. I think that there's significant, you know, turnover concerns with Locke, especially in a, you know, rainy atmosphere like Seattle. I don't think that is going to go particularly well. That being said, I do think, you know, ultimately, if Seattle doesn't go the veteran route, then at the number nine spot in the draft, they should have the option of choosing one of these rookie passers, because I think that everyone is expecting Kenny Pickett to go to Carolina at number six, or at least a lot of prognosticators for the draft are suggesting that. If that happens, you know, Seattle could end up landing, you know, Malik Willis out of Liberty. There's a chance that they could get another passer later on in the draft. But, you know, it would be really fascinating to see them stick around with Drew Locke going into this year. I could see Seattle taking a flyer on Desmond Ridder in the second round if he were to last that long. I think that would be a really good competition between Locke and Ridder. So there's definitely some pathways for Seattle to upgrade. I don't see too much incentive in them doing so right now, even with them having a veteran squad. I don't think that this team is going to be able to compete for a playoff.
Okay, would they take a flyer on Colin Kaepernick, Kalen? So we saw what happened at Michigan this last week. And is it time? Is it past time? Yes, in my opinion, it's past time. But would you see Seattle as, wow, that shocked me, stunned me if they went down the Kaepernick road or any team? Or is it just, look, Brad, that ship has sailed?
Well, it would shock me for sure. If Seattle was going to be that team, maybe it wouldn't shock me just because Pete Carroll reportedly, you know, spoke to the owners about, you know, their inability to, you know, make diverse hires and that, you know, how that starts with the ownership. Unfortunately for Pete Carroll, he's speaking to the same people who have honestly, at this point, from all intents and purposes, have blackballed Colin Kaepernick from the league. And at 33 years old, look, I'm as pro Colin Kaepernick as they come. You know, I want to see him back in the league. But it might be past time at this point. I don't think that he necessarily, you know, can't be on an NFL roster and compete. I just wouldn't expect him to step into a role and be an immediate starter, which I think is why he's kind of changed his tune as far as like being willing to accept a backup role at this point in his life. You know, he's 33 years old, has been out of football for multiple years. If he were to land on the team, you know, there are only, I could say, maybe 15 people on the planet who played the quarterback position adequately enough or good enough that there are no questions about whether or not, you know, they are a franchise quarterback or someone who is very good at what they do. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think Colin Kaepernick can crack, you know, the top 50 people, which in my opinion should be able to get you a job in the NFL. I just don't think that NFL teams will see the incentive in doing so at this point.
Two of the questions that get you out of here, and you can follow Kalen Jones. He's over at The Ringer. Follow him on all social platforms. It's good to see Kalen dropping knowledge here for a few minutes. What do you make out of Kyler Murray's agent and what's gone on here in Arizona, top to bottom here in the offseason? Here locally, I'll just give you the temperature. It's not been good. It's not been a good offseason for the Cardinals. What do you see on the national space over at The Ringer?
Yeah, so the Cardinals, in regards to Kyler Murray and how his agent have gone about, you know, trying to get a new deal. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. They're trying to leverage their ability to get a new contract. And honestly, I think if you look at the Cardinals, they might have been better incentivized to do so prior to Deshaun Watson getting his deal in Cleveland, which is fully guaranteed 5 years, $230 million. So if I'm Kyler Murray and, you know, I've been available for my team, you know, for the most part, I've shown that I can carry this team to a playoff appearance. I've shown improvement over the past, you know, 2-3 seasons that I've been in the NFL. He has a legitimate case for, you know, making maybe not the same money, but pretty similar money at this point. And so I think that, you know, it had to have happened about a month ago or so, like whenever the agent put out the statement when Burkhart did. But, you know, I get the incentive to act swiftly and to kind of be ahead of the curve. But, you know, with the TV money coming in next year, you know, I know that there was a big deal made about the fact that Kyler Murray deleted all of his pictures off Instagram and then now they're all back up. Yeah. I think, you know, it's just been dramatic, and I think that they're going to find a way to make it work because it makes the most sense. Like I mentioned earlier, the best pathway for these quarterbacks now is to play in the NFC. It's a much easier path to a Super Bowl. And that being said, you know, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals have a like at least a sturdy enough foundation there to where they've shown they can succeed at a high enough level, you know, compared to years past. So I don't think any of us really expected Cliff Kingsbury to get the Cardinals into the playoffs. We can talk about whether or not they underachieved or not, but the fact is they got to the playoffs last season. And that in itself is an accomplishment that not too many people expected from that pairing. So whenever they decide to get around to Kyler Murray's extension, I think it will end up getting done. You know, it's just offseason drama, which, you know, it has, the NFL has certainly not been light on it because that tweet feels like it's been decades ago.
It's a good way to put it. Before I get you out of here, the draft at the end of the month, how do you see the first few players shaking out? You do your research. You talk to people. Is there a player that's really intriguing to you? Maybe not gotten that much buzz as of yet, just overall in the draft from your view.
Ooh, that's a good question. Someone that hasn't gotten a lot of buzz that could go early. I would say it's Trayvon Walker from Georgia, but he's been getting significant buzz based on how well he did at the combine. He shot up draft boards despite not having any real production at Georgia. And granted, you know, that's probably because he was a part of, honestly, one of the greatest college football defenses in history. So I think that's definitely playing a role in that. Someone who Cardinals fans could probably, you know, be intrigued by, I think, like, George Karlaftis from Purdue hasn't gotten that much buzz. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the talk is Aiden Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau, and again, Trayvon Walker, who skyrocketed. But Karlaftis, if he lasts, you know, later into, you know, the first round, then I think he's someone that Cardinal fans could really, really, you know, like to add to their defense. I think that when you look at Arizona's success last season, a lot of it was predicated on what Vance Joseph's defense was able to do. And then Kyler Murray and the offense, you know, being a foil and playing really strong on the back of that. But they need a replacement for Chandler Jones. They need to find a replacement for Marcus Golden. Those are guys who I think they both had over 10 sacks for the Cardinals last year, and they don't have replacements immediately on the roster at that defensive end spot. So I think Karlaftis is a name to watch if I'm an Arizona Cardinals fan going into the draft.
I'll let you go off that. Good stuff as always. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
No problem, Brad.
Here's Kalen Jones. You can find his work on The Ringer and all social platforms. Appreciate Kalen here for a couple of minutes. I think in his next life, he's Remy Martin's agent, but that's just me. We're back with more after this timeout.